Truth Revolution.
Bringing you everything under the sun, under any sun, any star in the universe.
Are you flat earther now? Under the sun, Dave?
No.
Really?
What?
We're not under the sun.
Oh my gosh. See, now you're doing what you said not to do last week.
No, a couple weeks ago.
Whatever. Anyway. But anyway, welcome to Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason meet. They can coexist and really get along together. It's like a faith-reason mashup.
That's right. We got an important announcement. If you listened last week when we had Dr. Hiros on, you'll know this already, but I want to remind you that we are changing our format. We're going to be going to a monthly show instead of weekly show. This is going to happen April 1st. And so those of you who listen to the podcast, you make sure that you have this set up. You're going to get it automatically because you'll forget every month.
Yeah, absolutely.
So make sure it's set up to automatically download.
They're not going to forget.
Oh, they will forget. And if you listen on the radio, we're even considering maybe going off altogether. So just make sure you go to truthrevolution.tv. Make sure you get the podcast on your phone. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look it up. Just type in my name, Jeff Piepo, P-I-E-P-H-O. Did I spell that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
I made sure.
Pi-fo. It's like pi-fo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But check us out on podcasts, right. iTunes, things like that.
If you didn't catch how to spell that, just go to the podcast and rewind to this spot and you'll find out how to spell that.
There you go. Wow, that was not helpful at all.
So, I pride myself on that.
So it took me a minute and I was like, wait a minute, what did he just say? All right, so, but yeah, well, we're going to a monthly format starting April 1st on Easter. That's going to be a monthly show. Mm-hmm. And then May, we'll have a show. And then June, July, right. August, September, October, and so on. So we're going to go to monthly format. And so instead of 52 shows a year, we're doing 12.
Wow.
We're doing this not because the show's popularity is waning. We're doing this because of our time. The church is so busy.
Right. We are.
Church is growing. We want you to come out to Revolution Church. And we're just having to prioritize. And we think the show is important. That's why I want to keep doing it. But we want to prioritize so that we say, you know, we can do this 52 weeks a year.
Right. So come on out to Revolution Church so we can knock it down to twice a year.
Twice a year. We're going to put a podcast once a decade.
And that's how we would sound saying it. Anyway, so what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about manuscripts, right, Dave?
Yeah. We're talking about, you know, how do we know that the Bible we have is reliable?
Good question.
You know, a lot of people will say that. And we've heard the arguments before. We've talked about the arguments before. It's like, isn't the Bible a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy? It's like, you know, you get the Xerox effect going on where you do the copy of the copy and it loses its integrity. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
So we're going to talk about, you know, reliability of the New Testament as historical documents and, you know, what's out there, what does it compare to?
A lot of people worry though.
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
Indeed it is.
Yes, but you don't have to worry. Right. Whenever someone brings a challenge to you about the Bible, hey, you can't trust the Bible for this reason or that reason, know that there are good answers and you don't just have to say, you know what, just have faith, man.
Right, and that's the worst answer that you could ever give when
I
people ask questions
like
that.
I actually was listening to a book and it was talking about churches and how they reach young people. And he talked about this guy named Steve when he was a kid. He went to his pastor and he's like, hey, when I lift my finger up, did God know I was going to lift my finger up before I did it? And the pastor was like, yes, God knows everything. And he said, well, what about starving children in Africa? Did God know that they were going to die? And the pastor just said to him, you can't understand it, but yeah, God does, but don't worry about it. And sent him on his way.
Yeah, poo-poo.
That was Steve Jobs.
Whoa.
And when he was a kid, he asked those questions and he never went back to church again after that because the pastor just put him off and said, don't worry about it, man. It's not, don't worry about it. Just trust.
Right. The answers are out there.
The real answers, right. There's deep, I mean, theologians and philosophers, the smartest people on earth have been dealing with this stuff for 2,000 years.
Absolutely.
There are good answers, right, out there for this stuff.
Amen.
It's not, and if it's true, there's good answers for it. So you don't have to worry. Now, how do we know the Bible is true? Hank Handegraaff, good teacher, made up an acronym called MAPS.
Okay.
Manuscripts, archaeology, prophecy, statistics.
Right.
I use it all the time. Those are the four ways that we know scripture is from God and is true. Today, we're going to look at the manuscripts. Dave, what is a manuscript?
A manuscript is basically, I looked up the definition actually. Because
I'm glad you did.
Because I'd actually wondered, it's like, well, we talk about manuscripts all the time. And I got in my mind kind of like what a manuscript is, but what is a manuscript really? And so a manuscript, what are you doing?
I'm getting out my guitar.
Okay. All right, we're going to put it to a tune or what?
No. Tell me what a manuscript is, Dave.
Manuscript is, according to Merriam-Webster, is that it's a written document prior to the ability to print, press.
It's so much more dramatic like this.
It is, if you say so. But it sounds good.
Thank you.
And in fact, you can keep doing that for the whole show. That'd be great. And I'll go put on a cowboy hat and...
Okay, give it to me again.
Right, no worries. Manuscript is basically a written document that is obviously ancient, and it was written prior to the ability to copy it via print press. At least that's what Merriam-Webster says.
Yeah, basically, if you write something mm-hmm. and I sit down and I write a copy of it, I got a manuscript, right? Mm-hmm. And so then someone else copies that, then they've written down a manuscript. And so they've copied my copy of a copy.
Right.
So a lot of people say, well, the Bible is just one person copying a copy of a copy right. of a copy mm-hmm. of a copy. And for 2,000 years, we've been copying stuff. But that's not actually true.
That isn't.
That is not how the Bible came to be. That's not how we have the Bible.
Right.
Dave, you got on here this show that you put together today, mm-hmm. The word extant. What is extant?
Extant means actually existing.
And why is this important?
Because we have, there are things that in the process of aging, they either are destroyed or they're lost. And we don't have things that, okay, so say for extant, we don't have the extant autographs from the Bible.
Right. They have been destroyed
right.
or lost. I mean, there's a slight possibility that we have some of them. We just don't know.
Right.
But we, as far as we know, we don't have the original copies of the Bibles. Like, we have the original copy of the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
Okay. It's kept under lock and key. Mm-hmm. And some every once in a while you get to go look at it if you're in the right place at the right time. But
right. But
that was only a couple hundred years ago.
Right. And the simple fact is that, of course, today we put those stuff under protection from UV rays, from fingerprints and stuff like that. Back then, they didn't know about any of that stuff. So people handling it, got it out and said, hey, let me look at this clearer. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it degrades the paper that it's on.
Which is why copies are so important.
Right.
Now, what we didn't do when talking about like how the Bible came to be, and we said the Bible's not a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy.
Right.
Well, the Bible that you have now, you all know this. Think about this. Hey, we have digitized the Bible. Mm-hmm. So we have the Greek and Hebrew manuscripts that are in computers. And so every time a Bible is printed now, like, you know, it's not a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, right? For a long time, it wasn't just a copy of a copy. Mm-hmm. You can compare Bibles that are made today with Bibles made 10 years ago,
right?
They're going to be the same.
Yeah.
The words are going to be the same unless it's a different translation from the Greek, right? You compare the Hebrew and Greek now to the Greek and Hebrew 10 years ago. It doesn't change. Why? Because it's not a handwritten copy of a handwritten copy. But here's what's interesting. When you're making Bible translations today, we're not copying copies that were copied 200 years ago.
Right.
Or 300 years ago.
Right.
Or even 400 or 500 years
ago.
Now
he's getting right down to the heart of the matter.
We're not even making copies of things that were written down 1,000 years ago.
What?
Or 1,100 years ago. We are right. Dave, just how old are some of these manuscripts?
Some of these manuscripts may go back into the first century.
That is like almost 2,000 years old. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
So this is not a copy of a copy of a copy for 2,000 years. This is fragments and parts of the Bible that go back almost 2,000 years.
You know, and the crazy thing is, though, when we find new fragments that get older and older and older, we want to make sure that those are
And just to clear up, when you said when we find fragments that get older, you're meaning like an archaeologist is digging.
Yes, is what archaeologists do. They dig around and they find manuscripts that are dated even earlier than the ones that we have currently.
That's right. And so let's say right now we have a manuscript of the Book of Corinthians in the mm-hmm. Bible, and it is, and I don't know the actual date of Corinthians, and the copy we have is from the year 200. And you know, some sheep herder says, wow, you know what? I found this cave and there were some important markings there. Right. So, you know, archaeologists come in and they dig it up a little and they find a box with these papers. And oh my gosh, there's a scroll. And this is Book of Corinthians from not the year 200 AD, but from the year 90 AD.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And that's crazy because then you begin to wonder, well, what does it say?
That's right.
Can we compare it to what we have now?
And we do. That's what manuscript science is, an actual thing. Yeah. So there are people who sit down and they figure out, how do you make the Bible as accurate as possible so that we know exactly what was written and we're not using copies of copies.
Right.
So this is interesting. What they'll do is they'll take a copy, like the oldest copy we have, and they'll say, okay, I'm going to make up a sentence here. Okay. Just pretend this is in the Bible.
All right.
And it says in the Bible that babies like to wear shoes.
Okay.
Okay. Babies like to wear, I don't know why that's what I made up.
I haven't read that one.
But. Babies like to wear shoes. Okay. And that's the oldest manuscript they found. Mm-hmm. Now they go, okay, before we found that one at the year 100 AD, we also had scripts from the year 200 AD, and we had 10 different scripts from the year 200 AD. 9 of those scripts also said babies like to wear shoes.
Right.
One of those scripts said babies like to wear boots.
Oh.
Okay. Or booties. There, okay. Babies like, mm-hmm, to wear booties. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was always kind of like this challenge. And this is what a lot of people say is like, you can't trust the Bible because there's discrepancies.
Right.
You know, some of these manuscripts say shoe and some of them say booties. Well, which one is it shoes or booties? And by the way, this is what lots of the so-called problems are like in the Bible.
Right.
Is it really a big deal to say babies like shoes or babies like booties? It's kind of the same idea.
Right. You get the idea across, and that's what we want to worry about with the Bible.
That's right.
Is it getting the same idea across?
That's the first part. And so it's getting the first part across. And even if we couldn't figure it out, you still have the main idea.
Right.
But because 9 of those said shoes and only one of them said booties, I should have chosen a different word.
You should have, but that's okay.
Because 9 of them said shoe and only one of them said that babies like to wear booties, then the archaeologist, the manuscript scientist can say, probably the real word was shoe.
Right.
Because most of these people copied it the right way. This one person copied it wrong.
Absolutely.
This is weird. And so then they get one that's even older, 100 AD, and they go, oh, look, the oldest copy, it also says the word shoes.
Right.
So now they know the oldest copy says shoes, and 9 out of 10 of the younger copies say shoe,
right,
and only one of the younger copies says booty. And so they know the real text in the Bible was shoe. Babies love to wear shoes, not booties.
Right, absolutely. And the Bible doesn't lie about these things. I mean,
what do you mean the Bible doesn't lie?
You look in the notes.
Oh, yeah.
In the Bible, you know, the side notes and stuff like that, the footnotes and stuff.
Well, let me say that clear. Don't say the Bible doesn't lie about these things. Let's say the people who print the Bibles aren't trying to hide these things.
Absolutely.
Okay, because when you open the Bible, look at the footnotes, and it will say on many different pages, mm-hmm, some manuscripts use the word booty instead of the word shoe.
Right.
It's all out there. Mm-hmm. It's all out there. There's even one spot in the Bible where it stops and in the middle of the Bible page, it says the oldest manuscripts don't have this section.
Right.
Just so you know,
that's
right?
Awesome.
No one's trying to hide this stuff. It's right there in your Bible. If you're actually reading your Bible, but if you have a major problem with the Bible, there's a good chance you're not reading it anyway.
Right.
But just go ahead and read it. Now, Dave, you got a lot of statistics down here.
All right.
Let's go ahead and tell people what some of these things are.
Well, when we're looking at the validity of the Bible, and we want to know that the text that we have now is close to the ancient ones. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so we want to look at the number of the earlier ones, and then we want to look at what is available to us. And so we look at the extant manuscripts of the New Testament.
Yes.
Those are the ones that are existing, right?
Okay.
Okay. So we're looking at 5,856 complete or fragmented Greek manuscripts.
Okay. That's a lot. 5,856. Mm-hmm. Is that the most current number?
That is the most current number.
Can we put that number on the screen? 5,856.
There you go. Okay. And we want to add to that 18,130 plus non-Greek manuscripts. That would be Armenian and Latin, etc.
Okay. Got that number? 18,130.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then this gives the total of almost 24,000 manuscripts.
24,000 and this is not like manuscripts that were like in the year 1800.
Right.
These are like ancient.
Yeah.
These are 24,000 ancient manuscripts.
Yeah, these are dated from 100 to 300 years after the originals.
Okay.
Okay, so we're looking at probably somewhere between, like say 150 AD, mm-hmm, to like about, 250 AD-ish.
This is where a lot of them are going to occur.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But some of these, as we will mention, some of these actually go back within that first century.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We don't like to be make a bigger deal out of things than they really are.
Right.
So let's just say 100 AD is about where these things start.
Absolutely.
That's not all. Okay. Those are manuscripts. Those are large sections of scripture.
Mm-hmm.
We also have little tiny pieces, don't we?
Right. Little fragments that they know where it comes from in the Bible, what part in the Bible, because they can actually read the Greek or the Hebrew, and then they line it up with what is actually written, what we actually know about what is written in the Bible.
Yeah. So like if you took a page out of a book that you like and you just, you know, were kind of like ripped that page off and then you had like this little section.
I worked hard on that, Jeff.
I'm sorry. I just ripped Dave's manuscript. And this little tiny piece got buried. Mm-hmm. Then, well, okay. Now it's in two pieces. You got these little tiny pieces. Someone, an archaeologist who really studies Dave's writings, mm-hmm, 1,000 years from now might pull this up and go, okay, I only see a few words, but I know what order they're in, and I know how they're appearing, and I know exactly what this is.
Right.
This is a part of a fragment of what Dave wrote in March 2018.
Right.
And they would be the same thing with the Bible. So we have these little fragments. Some of them are bigger, and a lot of them are small, mm-hmm, like this.
Yeah.
But the basic gist of it is, why did I do that to the script? Now, how am I supposed to read this?
How are you supposed to follow along?
Can I have yours?
Sure. No,
just kidding. Okay, so we have these fragments. What are some of them called?
Some of them, like the Bodmer manuscript, contains most of John's gospel from around 150 to 200 AD.
Yeah. There is one that I'm not very familiar with that you brought up called the Magdalene fragment.
Yeah.
That could be within a few years of Jesus' death.
Right.
I'm not too familiar with this one.
Within the first century, they say that it pushes back into the possibility of being within just a couple of decades after Jesus' death. Now, that's just the possibility.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the testing, they said, can vary by decades, yeah, a couple of decades. Yeah. So,
what's also interesting is that the Dead Sea Scrolls, now these were found in like the 60s and 70s, somewhere in there. And until then, we had some really old manuscripts, a few hundred years old.
Right.
But they found these Dead Sea Scrolls and they went, whoa, these things date back to close to the first century, mm-hmm, maybe even past the first century.
Right.
And so they started digging these things and they compared them to what we had currently.
Right.
And they said, oh my goodness, we were using, this is like back in the 60s, right? We were using copies of copies of copies of copies to translate the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're not using copies of copies of copies. We're like getting really back close to when it was really written.
Right.
And guess what? Our copies of copies of copies of copies were almost identical to the ones that were like hundreds and hundreds of years earlier.
Right. You know, the big thing that I want to point out is that, you know, today we look at making manuscripts by hand as a very arduous task, as it was back then.
Yeah.
And so we were able to print. And so we're thinking, well, why should we do this? If I'm going to write this down, I'm just going to, you know, just blow through it and I might make mistakes. But these people back in the day, this was their only way of making copies.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to make sure. There were people called scribes that was their only job to do. And they took it so serious that you could get paid a fee to write out a manuscript.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it, you got to do it right.
That's right. And they would painstakingly write a letter at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And if they messed up any letter, the entire project was scrapped.
Right. And there goes your job.
So, like they were serious because, and you got to remember, right? This is not like a seventh grader copying an eighth grader's homework. These are people who dedicated their lives to God, who said, I believe these words are from God.
Yeah.
And now I am copying these words onto a new sheet of paper or a new sheet of papyrus for someone else. And they took this so seriously that they would not make mistakes. And if they did, they destroyed what they had been working on because they did not want any mistakes to creep in there.
Absolutely.
That's how serious it was. And that's why for hundreds and hundreds of years, there were no changes, even though we didn't have copies during those years. So we found the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were super early and they were almost identical to the ones that were hundreds and hundreds of years later.
Absolutely.
It was like something like 90, 98% mm-hmm, the same. And the main differences were like spelling differences and some other tiny differences were like the shoe versus booty difference.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I looked up in my research said 95 to 98%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there were not one major difference.
Right.
Not one of those said, and by the way, Jesus didn't really arise from the dead.
Right.
And
he's living in Oklahoma right now.
Well, he didn't rise from the dead, but he's living in Oklahoma.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know.
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
It is.
No, actually.
So we just started a new timeline.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Oh, all these years we've used that for other people saying stuff. Now he just used it on me.
Yes. I've been waiting, dude. We're going to go to a monthly format. I got to get in as many insults as I can per show now.
That's awesome.
No, it's all right. But here, okay, so some people might be going, okay, so what? You guys have lots of fragments.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have lots of old manuscripts. So what?
Right.
Like, what does that mean?
Well, the thing is that the Bible isn't the only thing that we do this with.
What do we do it with?
We do it with stuff like Homer's Iliad, you know, Plato's tetralogies, Caesar's Gallic Wars, and stuff like that. Because we, it's not just a Christian endeavor.
Yeah.
This is actually a world endeavor. It's a scientific endeavor.
That's right.
An archaeological endeavor.
And manuscript science is a real science that they use for any ancient document.
Right.
Tacitus's Annals, which we get a lot of ancient history from.
Absolutely.
Apply the rules of manuscript science. So, Dave, why is it important for us to bring up all these other works right now?
Because all these other works are considered to be truthful or complete, as close to possible or maybe even 100% exact of what the original manuscript was.
Yeah, okay, so people look at Homer's Iliad. Mm-hmm. You probably even read it in school.
Right.
And your teacher didn't start out by saying, "Now, just so you know, there's a lot of contestation about whether or not this book is accurate."
Right.
She's like, "Hey, this is what Homer wrote, you know, way back 800 BC. This is what Homer said. Or when did he live? I don't remember.
Back in 800 BC.
Okay. So this is what Homer wrote. But, you know, we didn't have manuscripts, so this might not be accurate." No,
right.
They gave you the book. This is what he said. The history books, Tacitus' Annals, we read it. We go, "Well, we want to compare this to reality." Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, we trust it. Now tell us why this matters.
Well, it matters because the closer that you can get with what we actually have our hands on, the closer you can get from that, what is the gap from that to the original manuscript? And that will tell you, well, how reliable might it be?
Okay, so what's the gap between when Homer wrote the Iliad and the first manuscript that we have?
First manuscript is probably right around 400 BC, so it's about 400 years.
400 years
mm-hmm.
from Homer's first writing until we have a copy. There was a 400-year mm-hmm. gap. What's the gap for the Bible? Just a few decades.
Right.
Okay. And Homer's Iliad is considered one of or the best ancient book as far as evidence goes.
Right.
How many copies of ancient manuscripts do we have?
1,800 plus.
Okay. Let's put that on the screen. 1,800 copies of Homer's Iliad. That's pretty darn good.
That is.
This is why people say it's trustworthy. This mm-hmm. is like the most out of ancient documents.
Right.
Compare that to what? 20,000 from the Bible?
Almost 24,000.
24,000 from mm-hmm. the Bible. So, okay, let's look at another one. What about Herodotus's writings?
Yes, histories. He has 109 copies.
That's it.
Okay, yeah, that's it.
109 copies. You got that on the screen. 109 copies and compared to 24,000 of the Bible.
Right, and the gap we have from what we do have to when he originally first wrote it, 1,350 years. That's a stretch.
1,300. So he wrote it 1,350 years later. Someone made a copy
That we found
of a copy. Mm-hmm. And we found that one. So there's mm-hmm. a 1,350 year gap.
Right. And it's history. And they take this as, pardon the expression, gospel. You know what I mean? As truth.
And then people say, "Well, I don't trust the Bible," but no historians have issues with these. Well, I shouldn't say no, but very few historians have issues with these.
They are taken as actual. So,
okay, let's burn through a few of these, right?
Okay. So we're looking at Sophocles' plays. He wrote in 496 to 406 BC. We have 193 copies of those. And the gap is about 100 to 200 years.
Yikes. Okay?
So not that bad, but still doesn't compare to the Bible. Okay.
All right. Plato's Tetralogies, 210 copies is all compared to 24,000.
Right.
1,300 year gap compared to a few decades for the Bible.
Right.
Caesar's Gallic Wars, only 251 copies, almost 1,000 year gap.
Right.
Livy's History, 150 copies, about a 400 year gap.
Right.
Tacitus's Annals, this is really relied on for history.
Right.
There's only 33 copies.
Yeah, and?
Almost 1,000 year gap.
Right.
Pliny the Elder, Natural History, only 200 copies,
mm-hmm.
400 to 700 year gap. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, actually.
Demosthenes?
But his speeches, how many copies?
340, and we're looking at a 1,400 year gap.
Over 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Compare all that stuff, man. The Bible has only a few decades of gap,
yeah,
and it's got 24,000 copies.
Yet it is questioned infinitely, well, I won't say infinitely, but it's questioned way, 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 way more than these writings are.
Yeah. The reason you have, it's good to have more copies because mm-hmm. then you can compare those copies to each other. And if all the copies say this, then you know that probably the original probably said that too.
Right.
But if the copies are all confused on a section, then you don't know what the original said.
Absolutely.
The more copies you have, the better. Well, I mean, Homer's Iliad is the best out of this entire list. He has 1,800 copies. So you look at it, go, wow, I can compare 1,800 copies. I can compare them all to each other. Mm-hmm. And I can get a pretty good idea of what Homer probably really wrote.
Right, absolutely.
Well, the Bible has 24,000 copies. And that's not even counting the fragments.
Right.
That there's thousands upon thousands more. All right. And, by the way, there's also quotations.
Mm-hmm.
Quotations from early church fathers. Right. Mm-hmm. This is not manuscripts. This is like, I'm going to say it. Donald Trump giving a speech and quoting the Bible. Barack Obama giving a speech and quoting the Bible. Okay, right. I don't like politics right now. Let's just say it though, okay? You get a president of the United States quoting a Bible in a speech, and then 1,000 years from now, they're going to have a copy of that speech, and he's going to quote the Bible, and that's the type of thing we're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're going to say, back then, this is exactly what the Bible said because he's quoting from the Bible.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so what are some of these?
Well, Clement of Rome, he was a disciple of the apostles, cited Matthew, John, and 1 Corinthians in 95 to 97 AD.
That's just a couple decades after it was written.
Right. Ignatius, who knew the apostles well, referred to 6 Pauline epistles in about 110 AD.
Okay, again, that's just a few decades after the Bible was written.
Polycarp, a disciple of the apostle John, quoted from all 4 Gospels, Acts, and most of Paul's epistles from 110 to 150 AD.
And by the way, when you read these guys' writings, what doesn't happen is, okay, the Bible was written, and then, you know, later on, some people exaggerate it, and then decades later, and then 100 years later, then 500 years later, people start calling Jesus God,
right.
And then 1,000 years later, people start worshiping Jesus. No, Jesus lived, died, rose from the dead. The Gospels are written, and immediately people started worshiping Jesus
absolutely.
As the risen Lord.
Mm-hmm,
so this is fast. So when you read these writings by the church fathers, these people who knew the apostles, they're already worshiping Jesus as the risen Lord.
Right. Tatian's Harmony of the 4 Gospels was completed in 160 AD.
Yeah.
And so we're looking, Irenaeus apparently heard the apostles quoted from Matthew, John, Acts, and 1 Corinthians around 160 AD. So,
all right, we're going to pause there and do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Abraham had 2 sons. Or wait a minute, was it just 1?
Abraham had many sons.
Many sons had father Abraham.
Let's never do that again.
I'm really surprised I fell right in line there.
You knew that song. I was actually surprised you knew the song.
All right.
Should I get my guitar out again?
No. We're in a Bible contradiction. Let's blow through it. All right. Check it out. So did Abraham have 2 sons or was it just 1? Genesis 16:15 said, so Hagar born Abraham's son, and Abraham gave his name Ishmael to the son she had born. So there's 1. There's Ishmael. Genesis 21:1-3 says, now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time that God had promised him. Abraham gave his name Isaac to the son Sarah had bore him.
So there's Ishmael and there's Isaac.
Right. And then Galatians 4:22 said, for it is written that Abraham had 2 sons, one by the slave woman and one by the free woman. However, there's a little hitch here.
Uh-oh.
Hebrews 11:17 says, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac to be a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his, one and only son.
So, the book of Hebrews says,
Isaac was his only son.
Yikes. So which one is it? All right. Let's go to our cracked acronym, which is famous throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I didn't know Sam and I were looking up statistics for Truth Revolution.
Uh-huh.
Can you guess what country has the second most listeners after the United States?
England.
Nope. That would have probably been my guess too, but it's not.
Canada?
Nope. That's like 3rd.
Japan.
It's Japan.
Is it really?
It's Japan.
Wow.
So anyway.
That was going to be my first guess, but.
I am so honored that you're listening
to
the show.
All right. That is awesome.
Now. The answer to this question is pretty simple.
Okay.
Very simple.
Hit us up.
Abraham had disowned Ishmael.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that because he sent her on her way.
Yeah, he kicked him out, man.
Right.
And so this is the D for dialect, right? It's not saying biologically Abraham had only 1 kid. It's saying practically. Mm-hmm. He only had one kid. He had disowned. He kicked that kid and his mother out.
Yeah.
They had to leave, and God took care of them in the desert.
Wow.
Isaac was his only son at that point that he was actually caring for. And so, plus, there's a lot more going in there when it's just trying to use the same verbiage mm-hmm. that God used for Jesus
right.
as God was using for Abraham and Isaac, right? God sent his son Jesus, his one and only son. Abraham wasn't willing to sacrifice Isaac, his one and only son. He's trying to use some of that same verbiage right. to make the point that it's an analogy. So that's it. That's our show for Truth Revolution. Come back next week.